You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the show. Hope all is well in your world. Hello, Houston Crest.
Did you mean to say Wednesday, like JFK?
Wednesday. It's a Wednesday afternoon. We will go to the moon and do the other
it
thing.
It is a Wednesday. It had a little, yeah, a little Wednesday.
He said
Wednesday.
Something insane yesterday.
I've got a little bit of allergy. Like, it hasn't hit me until today, and it started raining, and now I've got a little bit of the drainage going on. And, oh, well, what are you going to do?
Was it yesterday? We all looked at each other. I can't remember.
Did I said?
Yeah, you just said a word that didn't exist.
It happens, man. I got 3 hours to fill.
You replaced an I with an A.
Like Feta.
It'd be like if you called it, like, University of Tennessee Athletics, but the opposite. Like, athletics. But it wasn't athletic.
I can't remember what it was.
I forgot the word, but I know that there was a word.
There were many words uttered yesterday. There
so will be many words.
Many words uttered today. Here on The Drive, we've got Thunder Dan Harrelson.
Mr.
Making
excitement.
His triumphant return to the show in just a few minutes to talk all things Tennessee athletics as we are 135 days away until kickoff.
I thought it was 136 today.
Oh, you went and looked it up?
I'm not 100% sure. I found a website that said it was 128 days away, and then I added a week because it was the 24th, but we kick off on the 31st. So I'm just ballparking here, Cress. If you want to jump down my throat every other thing
yesterday
in the first segment, we could do that. We could go to war. You want to bang heads with me, Cress? Let's go.
I would.
He's been a little bit froggy today,
Russ. I'd take my head over yours. It's a big noggin. I got 136 because I thought, we talked about it yesterday. It was 137. You were like, 37. And I said, yeah.
What's a day between friends or mortal enemies?
Your choice, Houston.
As the case may be.
Hey, stay out of it over there.
Rick Barnes trying to fill up his roster. Tony Vitello is headed to Coal Country for a top five matchup with Kentucky this weekend.
It just sounds so weird coming out of your mouth.
What?
A top five matchup. With Kentucky.
Kentucky,
I can't believe it.
They're the higher-ranked team. We have to go into their place and take it from them. We have to go take it from them.
What's their park called?
Kentucky Proud Park.
What's so funny about that? Kentucky Proud.
Is that like a credit union?
Local charity or something?
Like, what is that?
I have to look that up, but that's the name of it.
It looks nice on TV for college baseball environment. Tennessee, by the way, I found this interesting. Big Orange on pace to shatter their single season attendance record in baseball this year. We're averaging 5,123 fans per game. Not a lot. More people listen to this show than go to the typical Tennessee baseball game. But
I don't like thinking
about that. You've added seats there, so that's to be expected. You know, there's excitement and everything, and you think 5,000, well, that's not much. It ranks 10th nationally. We are 10th in the country in attendance.
In
baseball.
Does
that seem odd to you?
No, we're also – no, because in
– second half does.
Football, women's basketball, and men's basketball.
We the champs.
Yes, number one. But, I mean, like 5,000 – I read that, and I was like, oh, man. That's kind of small. That's kind of piddling, right?
And then the 10th?
Really? 10th nationally.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that it probably just says a little bit more about college baseball. I think we have trouble with this as it's still a niche sport, even though we are embracing it like we do the other sports to the most of the country. I mean, even several SEC towns don't embrace, you know, embrace it the way.
Who's in front of us? Did you?
Well, I mean, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss,
Texas Florida. In there.
Texas, Austin.
Yeah,
they draw big.
I would imagine so. They got a big park out
probably
there.
Probably Texas A&M.
Yeah, it was a guess.
A&M's got a big ballpark.
Yeah,
I mean it's not many when you think about it, which kind of reinforces the point. The SEC,
I've got them if you want it.
Oh, yeah. I want it.
LSU, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Florida, South Carolina, Texas, Texas A&M, Southern Miss.
Really?
And Tennessee.
They love their baseball down there,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, they do.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
It is cool.
It's kind of awesome that we're leapfrogging them this year after having to go down there last year.
So what does it have the attendance number, the average attendance number?
It does not have the average. This is actually this is total college baseball home attendance. This is for last year. But I don't think that would change that much because 11th was Oklahoma State, and we were like 10,000 above them for the season.
Now, I do wonder, what is the capacity when it's all said and done? It's like 8,000 max, right?
I thought it could swell to like 85. I think they said they want to eventually be able to swell to 9.
I still think it'd be cool if they could figure out a way to make a man-made berm up. Behind
you want a hill?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over behind the fence out there.
I'm not a big berm guy. I feel like a berm just detracts from the intensity of your environment.
Makes it louder.
How can you be excited about something when there are people lounging on blankets?
I don't know. I remember some of the games we played in against teams in the postseason that had those berms. It was like just another mountain of people making noise.
A berm, a mountain of people making noise.
Yeah, like imagine.
No,
like
I'm staunchly anti-berm. We were at the
staunchly anti. What the hell's a berm ever done to you?
I'm telling you, berms just detract from it. It's impossible to be intense when there's a berm. People are lounging on blankets. You've got a cooler next to you. Kids are playing. They're tumbling down the hill. Berms, man.
Florida's new park has a berm, and look at them. They're not very good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like
the berm,
that series down there, there's just people like there. You're not even paying attention. You're on the berm.
The berm curse.
The berm doesn't have to be family friendly out there. It could be just a
rowdy berm.
Hell yeah.
No blankets on the berm.
No.
You have to be hammered to enter the berm.
You have to have a breathalyzer and be above 0.08 before you can be allowed on the berm. Legally drunk. I don't know. I'll workshop it. How about that?
Think it needs to be. Yeah, Tennessee press release today. UT posting the highest overall attendance for any school in the nation across football, men's basketball, and women's basketball with a total of 1.1 million people attending the Volunteers' 38 home events in those three sports. That figure put Tennessee well over 96,000 spectators above second place LSU, which had 44 home events. People love their sports here, man.
They had more events and we still beat them?
Yeah. Oh. 6 more events.
Sucks to suck.
Well, they didn't draw much for men's basketball.
They were pretty poor.
The football stadiums are about even. Both have about 100,000 seats. They probably outdrew us in women's basketball this year, I would guess.
I wouldn't say probably. I'd say without a doubt.
And then we would certainly have outdrawn them in men's basketball.
Yes.
I think you got to throw in baseball to those numbers coming up here soon. Is baseball more important to an athletics department's bottom line than women's basketball?
Depends on where you are. I'd say at Tennessee they could be, I mean both could be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Have the women ever really been? I know you say that they have, but have they ever really been profitable?
Yes. Yes.
I always assumed they operated in the red, even when they had it up and rolling.
No, we were one of two, Texas, Tennessee.
Isn't that one of those things though? It's like you can cook the – I'm not saying they weren't. I'm guessing they probably were profitable back when Pat really had it going. But you can do a lot of smoke and mirrors with these athletics department budgets.
And profitable – I'm not saying they were just banking money. I'm saying they covered themselves, and there was a little extra at the end of the day. That's including salaries and travel and all that stuff.
I wonder if you can do that in baseball.
Yes.
Like certain schools
LSU's
can.
Profitable.
In baseball?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I've looked this up. One moment.
I don't know why that's so surprising. Again, like who knows? Like we don't have access to the books. And again, you can
you make books say anything.
Are you figuring in the cost of the pregame meals and all the equipment that has to be purchased, the staffing and all that stuff? Are you figuring in the coach's compensation? I mean, there's
– well, Tennessee cuts out one huge expense, and that's like groundskeeping stuff. So you got that artificial.
Mm.
But you still have to cover the field. You still have to maintain the mound.
It's not just cutting it, just the amount of maintenance that a real field requires, like the man hours.
LSU was second on this list. You want to guess who was third in total attendance, football, men's basketball, women's basketball?
Texas?
Texas was eighth.
I'm being told the women's basketball team was only profitable because the men's program assumed all facility costs and debt services under the men's program.
I don't have it line by line. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Right.
South Carolina.
What?
South Carolina was third with over a million fans. The only three schools with over a million fans in all three major sports, Tennessee, LSU, and South Carolina. Michigan was fourth. Nebraska was fifth.
Nebraska fans are weird. They show up for their
daily
beating.
They had good basketball seasons in both men and women.
I mean, South Carolina, that really doesn't surprise me. I mean, they're goofy about their football team, whether they're good or bad. Their basketball team had a great year, and they've got the best women's program in the country. As much as it pains me to say that.
Ohio State, Penn State, Texas, Alabama, and Texas A&M rounding out the top 10 in combined attendance for those sports. And yeah, that is hard to figure. I mean, you've got a pretty wide spread of events. Tennessee had 38 games played in those three sports. LSU had 44, and so there was a lot of schools with in between numbers in those figures.
I see what you're saying.
Coming up, we'll visit with Thunder Dan Harrelson, Tennessee. Igor Milicic has completed his visit. He's down to Tennessee, Nebraska, and Baylor, still waiting on Tobe Awaka to decide whether or not he will come back or not. Tennessee baseball, the hammer job on Bellarmine, another grand slam for the Volunteers. And you could feel that one coming. I don't know if anybody was watching that one when Bert came up.
I was listening at that point.
It was like, he had two strikes, and he wasn't even really close. You're like, he still might crank one out, and sure enough, he smashed one
when he gets off the scoreboard. He gets a hold of it. Turned out you were right. He took the lead in the home run thing. It was kind of feel like if you're Simo, you're kind of like, I had the night off, but now this guy's got a...
I was worried that his hit streak would come to an end, and he got a hit in the first inning.
First at-bat he had. That wasn't even the grand slam.
No. Stay with us. The Drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. Dan Harrelson from VolsWire.com coming up next. Back here on The Drive, it's Fan Run Radio. Russell Bear in Houston cruising with you.
He kind of did it again.
I did?
We're here on Fan Run Radio.
Russell Fitzgerald Kennedy over there.
What your country can do for you.
Hope I have a better ending.
Just did it again.
Don't open that window.
Hope I have a better ending. Let's get Dan the Man Harrelson from VolsWire.com. in here with us this afternoon. What's up, Dan?
Hey, how's it going? Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, man, long time no speak. Hope you're doing well. Always love to get you on after spring practice to see what the Harrelson Index is at. Of course, you nailed it 2 years ago when you came on and said you thought Josh Heupel would go 10-2 in year two. Everybody thought, what the hell is Harrelson smoking? And lo and behold, you were correct. I don't remember what your prediction was last year. Tucker says it was 11-1. We won't hold that against you. They can't all be spot on, can they, Dan? But all that being said, what do you think Nico Iamaleava, year four of the Josh Heupel era, where is the Harrelson Index at today?
I think right now, I think it's a 10-2 type season. That's what I went with, like, right after the bowl game. This was, like, 2 days before Saban retired, so I still had 10-2 beating Saban. I still have Tennessee, since it's at home, year one for Alabama, new coach. Obviously, they still don't have a lot of talent, but I think they can still beat Alabama. They possibly, even as crazy as this sounds, may have even upgraded from an offensive standpoint this year for Alabama under DeBoer. But I don't know. I think Oklahoma could be a little bit tricky early on, especially with Nico, maybe his first big-time performance in the conference. Of course, you do have the NC State game as well early on. So he's going to be thrown into the fire early, but I do think, considering the SEC with two name brands coming in and one being on Tennessee's schedule, and you're playing a bunch of other tough teams, including NC State, neutral site, who really benefited their roster offensively, I think it's 10-2. I think Tennessee's got a pretty good schedule considering the landscape of the Southeastern Conference, and I think right now that they're right there. Top five SEC, and that should be maybe top 12 at the end of the season. So right now I'm still kind of thinking 10-2. I really didn't learn too much from spring practices this year. I did look at the defensive side a little bit more, specifically the defensive backs. Some of those guys that came through, that they passed the eye test, so we'll kind of wait and see how it unfolds with Willie and Tim Banks on the defensive side. But I think this is a pretty good roster, and we're in an age where the college football playoff, as long as you're top 12 in the committee's eyes, and we all know how that can go, they can play politics with it. But I do think Tennessee has a pretty good chance to get in there.
So 10-2, I can live with that. That would probably be good enough, I would say, to get into a expanded 12-team college football playoff. Would we all take 10-2 money in the bank right now, just going around the room?
Yes.
Yeah, because that probably means everybody stayed relatively healthy. I'd take that.
Yes.
All right. And you're absolutely right, Dan, about, like, it is so hard. We used to talk about the orange and white game, right? What are your takeaways there? I don't even know if that's a useful exercise with what these spring games have become. But I do think you can look at 15 spring practices, the storylines that came out, and ask if there are any takeaways there. Do you have any big takeaways from spring practice for Tennessee this season?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, number one, I don't know, and it's kind of a landscape type thing. Number one, with how college football is, I mean, guys can transfer in left and right. I guess some guys are on their third, fourth school or whatever it is throughout college football, just switching teams left and right. So we don't know if totally all these guys, I mean, I'm sure the majority of them will be back, but you never know. You could bring some in, let some go or whatnot. So I think it's tough to get really invested just off 15 spring practices in this day and age. But number two, I don't think there's a lot of buzz around spring practices with Tennessee's program, especially the last couple seasons after that 22 season, just because it's on cruise control. Because everybody knows what Josh Heupel's going to do offensively on game days, on Saturdays in the fall. and we're just waiting to see how the Jimmys and the Joes will actually perform in the system on game day to beat some quality opponents. So I think mostly this program is on cruise control right now until we actually get to fall camp and SEC media days right before the season starts. So I think, like I said, it's just a kind of a testament to what Josh has built. A lot of people have faith in him for that. And, you know, there's just not a lot to take away from spring practice. I think Lance Hurd looked really good. I think he can be a staple on the offensive line. Same thing with a leader, Amari Thomas. I think he's definitely going to be a staple on that side. But, you know, just looking at the guys in the orange and white game in the defensive backfield, you had McCoy and Gibson at corner. I think those two guys need to play a huge role on the bookends, on the defensive side of the ball. Jacoby Thomas at safety and John Slaughter at safety, that they have potential. And then, of course, Jordan Thomas at star. So I think some of those guys are going to have to really step up. And if they do, you know, James Pierce, Amari Thomas, some of the other guys, that can make this defense kind of click, coincide with the offensive side as long as Nico continues to take those strides and be a leader throughout this offense.
One interesting question that it looks like Tennessee is grappling with right now, Dan, is their running back room. You have the injury to Cam Seldon. You're not sure if he's going to be ready to go to start the season as he recovers from a shoulder surgery. He is, I think we would all agree, unproven over the long term as it is. It's an interesting story that came out from On Three last night that Damian Martinez, who is viewed as the top player in the transfer portal, according to On Three, running back from Oregon State in the portal, they said he was coming in. He had a visit scheduled for Tennessee for later this month. You have some of the Tennessee On Three mods who obviously have connections with the coaching staff saying that's not true. There is no such visit. Dan, why would you not want to recruit a great running back talent with that room being as unproven as it is behind Dylan Sampson?
It's a great question. I mean, it makes you wonder, was this a situation where he maybe saw a few running backs maybe ahead of him on the depth chart and he's not RB1 and maybe he wants to go elsewhere for that? I'm not sure. Or maybe Josh has spoken with him and said, look, we got Sampson, Keith, Seldon, Peyton Lewis. It could be a little bit by committee this year, and maybe – you know, respectfully, he said, I'll look elsewhere, visit elsewhere. So it could have been a situation like that. But I think that actually could be a decent sign that Josh may have laid out the blueprint for him and maybe some other transfers saying, look, this is what we got right now. Can you add to it? And maybe Josh is going to look elsewhere, continue to look elsewhere to kind of add another – back, you know, he's done this before with people like Lynn J. Dixon, and he's not afraid to bring guys in. Obviously, Joe Milton the day after the Orange and White game a couple years ago. So he's always going to keep an eye on the portal and see if he can just kind of add to certain situations.
Thunder Dan Harrelson with us this afternoon on The Drive. You check him out at Dan Harrelson on Twitter, of course, VolsWire.com. Dan, moving to baseball right now, you know, coming into the season, we all looked at that LSU series as, oh, that's going to be the big series of the season, defending national champions coming into Knoxville. As it turns out, that LSU team, not nearly what it was last season. Tennessee appears to have another really good team going under Tony Vitello, and this weekend they're going to what could be the series of the season, at least so far, at top five Kentucky, two top five teams going at each other in Lexington. Your thoughts on this monumental matchup with the Wildcats?
Yeah, I mean, it really is kind of monumental because, I mean, they're both up there top five, at least in the USA Today coaches poll, 3 for Tennessee, 5 for Kentucky. And I don't know, you look at Tennessee, Kentucky offensively, that they're 1-2 in 8 SEC categories, batting average, slugging percentage, on-base percentage, RBIs, hits, runs scored, doubles, and total bases. So you think you would expect to see some kind of, I wouldn't say offensive power. Obviously, Tennessee's got a little bit more of that than Kentucky. Kentucky is more of the small ball. I always think of 2003 Marlins when I see Nick and Kentucky up there with that style of play, because they're going to be really aggressive on the base paths. And he kind of gets that from Cohen when he was with him at Mississippi State for such a long time, and he's implemented that into his program there at Kentucky. He's done a really good job. But it's going to be fun. I mean, it also must be a curse if you look at LSU and Ole Miss and Mississippi State. If you win it all, you may not make Cooper the next year. Of course, that kind of shows how recruiting is in this league. You can be the best team in all of college baseball, lose a few guys, and that can really be detrimental to your next season. And, you know, LSU may not even make Hoover at this point. Maybe they can sneak in. But, yeah, there just was not a lot of buzz around that LSU series. There was more buzz just obviously for Tennessee, keeping an eye on them as they keep things going this far into the conference schedule.
It's really hard to figure out who's good and who's not in this league. You know, as doing some research over the weekend on this series with Kentucky, and I was going through the teams they've played, because that's the knock, is they've built this big record against the dregs of the league. And I came up with the stat that, well, they have not won a series. They have not played a series against an opponent that has a record higher than 500. In conference play. Put that out there, feeling rather good about myself, and an alert fan immediately responded, neither has Tennessee. So I had to walk that one back a little bit. It's interesting, isn't it, Dan, when you look at who these teams have played, and both teams have to be feeling good about themselves, but you could also make the argument for either team that it's been fool's gold up until this point.
Right. No, that's exactly right. You look at Kentucky last year. They went on a pretty good tear. I think they started out like 8-1 in the conference play. They may have played Georgia, lost 2 out of 3 to them, and then went down to LSU, lost 2 out of 3, and kind of spiraled at that point. They were still a solid group. I think they ended up going to, what, the Supers against LSU also. But, yeah, I mean, Kentucky, they swept Georgia. Obviously, Tennessee took 2 out of 3 against them at home. They went to Missouri and won two. They swept a series at Ole Miss when Tennessee won 2 out of 3 here. They swept Bama. Then again, Tennessee, obviously, the only series they lost in Tuscaloosa. And then they swept Auburn, and Tennessee won 2 out of 3 at Auburn. And then just looking at strength of schedule, Kentucky's at 25 compared to UT's 45. RPI 7-3 in favor of Tennessee. And then look at Kentucky, 12 Q1 wins to Tennessee 6. So I don't know. I think we're at the point where with his program at Kentucky, the small ball, the aggressiveness on the base pads, can they put it this part into the season, the middle part of the season, but right before everything gets warm, going to Hoover, regional play, all that stuff, will they fall apart again before they rebound and make the postseason tournament? I think that's a little bit of the question surrounding Kentucky's program at this point. Will they taper off, especially in a series like this?
Do you like that, you know, people always will compare to the team 2 years ago that ironically did not go to Omaha, and all the swagger that team had, the trash talk, the Gilberts, the Becks, all the guys we know. This team completely different, Dan. Yeah, they still got the daddy hat and the fur coat, but – very much more about the business. Even Tony Vitello seems to be a little bit tamer by his standards in the Tennessee dugout. Do you think that's just a byproduct of the personalities on this team? Do you think that is something that Vitello has conscientiously tried to instill in his team? And do you think any of it matters at the end of the day?
No, I think it matters. I think this is the team the most, I don't know how to say this. This is the team for Vitello, and he came in 2018, seventh year. I think this team is his most complete team in terms of people being on the same page from top to bottom. They're all in. Not saying there's any bad apples years prior, but I think it's a little bit from top to bottom, this is a very good roster, too. He's got a ton of talent. And they're all – there's no egos. There's no talking. They're just going out having fun. They've switched up their routines for the celebrations. That's always good not to keep something around from prior teams that has no value for the current team. Obviously, the daddy hat and the fur coat are pretty much staples to the program, so that's okay. But I don't know. I've seen every team he's had up close, and this is definitely his best team top to bottom, and everybody just having fun, being on the same page and everything.
All right, good stuff. Dan Harrelson, VolsWire.com. Dan, anything else you care to add to the record today before we let you run? It has been a pleasure, my friend.
No, I mean, I'm just ready for football. I know you started out with football, but I'm just ready for football after we get done with this baseball stuff. And I'm really anxious to see what Nico can do with this team, this program, and see if he can navigate first year as a starting quarterback to the playoffs and get Tennessee back there.
You know, it's hard, Dan, doing what we do because there should be so much excitement around this football team. And I believe there will be. I believe it will sure begin soon. But right now, it just doesn't move the needle much in terms of response from our audience. And I think that's just Josh Heupel. He is such an enigma to me. It's so interesting that a guy whose on-field product is so exciting to watch, everything about the guy off the field, the way he runs his program, the way he does interviews, press conferences, things like that, it is almost boring. it's pretty dull.
Yeah, I'll say this. I mean, we obviously cover all the sports and spring practice, all that good stuff, and I would rather be doing football stuff 24/7, but, you know, at Ballswire, that there's people are very into baseball, and we feel like we need to put more baseball content out there, so that's what we do. And, you know, it's just a testament to both programs. I said it's not a slight on Heupel, it's just a testament that he's got this thing on cruise control. And then the flip side, Tony's doing what he's been doing for quite some time now. So it's pretty cool stuff. It's pretty good to see a lot of good programs right now at Tennessee. I mean, look at softball. They're first place again in the conference. So just tons of good teams at Tennessee right now.
I mean, they've got, what, 3,500 people, maybe 4,000 people over there last night to see Tennessee play Bellarmine, Bellarmine. And it's a beautiful night, you know. Why wouldn't you want to go out and have a cold beer at Lindsey Nelson Stadium and watch Tony's boys hit a few dingers? But it's pretty incredible how that sport has become not only something that we follow during the season, but the quote-unquote throwaway games, you know, that people are still talking about as well there too.
Yeah, and some people may be really into this home run chase too. I mean, obviously it still counts for those Tuesday night midweek games, but, you know, Christian Morris sits out last night. He's going to be rested up for the Kentucky series, but keep in mind, Christian Moore has more home runs than Blake does in SEC play. I think he's sitting at 9 compared to Blake's 4, so it's good to see Blake get some action there, keeping it going last night. But he kind of needs to take that next step to keep up with Christian in these conference games.
Awesome stuff, Dan. Really appreciate the time. Everybody go check him out at VolsWire.com for all the latest on Tennessee baseball. He does a great job covering the program there. Dan, we will do it again soon. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Dan Harrelson, one more time on the program. A lot to unpack there. Always fun breaking things down with him. We will open up the phone lines here if you want to jump in. 865-288-3131. By the way, programming note, Drew Beam scheduled to join us on these airwaves tomorrow at 3:20. Live from the bus. He's going to be calling in from the bus as Tennessee rolls up to Lexington for this big SEC series. So make a note in your calendar to be tuned into the Drive tomorrow afternoon as well. Quick time out. We're back with more right after this.
The Drive.
Drive continues, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, streaming online, fanrunradio.com, your free Fan Run app, a variety of ways for you to experience the program this afternoon. Dan Harrelson, Bear, what did you learn?
So many things to pick from. Where do you want to start?
Well, you too busy over there making a racket to listen to Dan?
Shut up.
You couldn't hear his interview over all the noise you were making?
Shut up.
I wish you would shut up during the interview I'm trying to do.
I turned off all the mics for most of the noise. You're a punk and a clown, Smith.
I gotta teach you how to get out of that when you haven't been paying attention. So much to talk about. Where do you want to start? Like, that's the worst thing you can say.
No, it's not.
You got to make something up. Like, you know what he talked about. Just, that he thinks Nico is going to be very good. And I'll tell you what I did.
I spent the whole interview. I've been looking for a desk cover for the board. That's what I was doing over here.
He followed spring practice a lot more closely than I did. He was mentioning guys in the secondary. I'm like, what?
Who?
Huh? I'm like, McCoy was out there? Okay, cool.
Are we going to be okay in the secondary?
That's been my big question.
Bum, bum, bum. I don't know.
I'm more concerned about the kicker after the conversation we had yesterday.
I don't know.
Care less about
They got into a big kicker conversation this morning, and I was like, man, we've actually had a pretty good run of kickers.
This morning?
Who's it going to be?
On the morning show?
No. Just some guys that he was overheard talking out behind the dumpster. Bear, I'm going to need you to dial in here.
I am dialing in. He referred to the midday show as a morning show.
It's not midday. It goes until noon. Noon is midday. I'm just saying, you know. It is the morning. That is the name of their show. I should have just said.
Yeah, when you're saying, you know, meet a folks. I mean, he's saying it's the morning show, so I'm assuming that's John and Bob.
I thought I said they were talking about it this morning on the show, which they were. But I didn't specify.
Who is going to be our kicker? Is it Turbeville?
I don't know. I think so. I think it will be.
He was like, the kickoff man last year.
It's crazy.
You'd
and
think so.
Every football fan would agree with this. You take kickers for granted until you have a bad one.
Yeah.
And then it is.
Yeah. Well, who's to say this? He's a bad one? Well,
no. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we don't know.
Off on this poor Turbeville kid.
Have we ever had.
Not doing that.
Have we ever had a bad kicker?
Been a long time. It's an outlier when we've got a bad kicker.
I feel like Lincoln had a stretch where it was like 50-50.
Didn't he have
he had a hamstring,
like,
yeah.
Hamstring or hip flexor or something?
Is that it? Okay.
I can't name you one that was just bad. Because I feel like Simaglia was one of the few bright spots in the Pruitt ladder butcher teams.
No, he was Automaglia.
Yeah.
Who was it in the late 80s?
Bexford?
Was it Bexford?
Bexford
was early 90s.
He was good. Bexford was the man.
No, he was the best maybe we'd ever had, and then Jeff Hall came along and kind of broke all those records.
There's Bexford, Jeff Hall.
They did the order. Then it was like Alex Walls. Alex Walls was okay.
Who's the best? Fawad?
Let's see, that was before my time. I've heard great things.
And Jeff Hall was pretty hard to beat.
He was automatic.
Jeff Hall 50. Was clutch, too.
Yep. Kicker is important. I feel like secondary is more important.
Yeah.
Have a good secondary can cover up for a bad kicker. I don't plan on kicking a lot of field goals with Nico Iamaleava pulling the strings at quarterback.
No, but you definitely want to have one that you're comfortable with because you got to score points. Anymore, with the rule changes in football – you can't really have too many wasted possessions, and if you've got a guy that can nail it from 45 plus with a pretty high percentage, that's a hell of a weapon to have.
Do you think Jackson Ross, who was a little bit shaky last year, Australian punter punts with both feet, he's going to be awesome.
He started very poorly,
but he finished strong.
Finished very very strong.
Finished pretty strong. Do you think he becomes a consistent weapon for the program now?
Yeah, I do.
I think he was by the end of the year already.
What was the stat last year? We had one punt returned against us for 1 yard.
It's going back like multiple seasons now. We've given up like – it was under 10 yards in punt returns in 2 years.
I mean, to average I want to say when he just would kick it straight down the field, not trying to do anything silly, it was like, you know, 48 yards, but the hang time was ridiculous.
That's why we don't give up.
Yeah, exactly. And then your defenders are there waiting on him to catch the ball. They're not going to do anything but fair catch it at that point.
Yes.
Shout out to Ronald Acuna finally getting his first home run of the season. Braves promptly turned around and surrendered two runs to trailing the Astros. But that's pretty cool to see Ronnie get off the schneid there.
Let me find the tweet. Okay, so this account 24 minutes ago said some big names that hadn't homered yet, and literally 5 minutes later he homered and Acuna was on the graphic.
We appreciate it.
There's a good reverse jinx there for you.
Yeah, I was tired of seeing that list during every Braves game for the past week or so. Hopefully he will become unconstipated of home runs now and just start plopping them out.
The imagery is a little.
I'm sorry.
I mean, along with constipation.
Right, and then
have
plopping.
You seen this pile of crap?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cute. 865-5. Damn it. First time I've done that. The old one.
That's the Russell team sound effect.
What's that?
Fart.
A one cheek sneak. What is that? I don't like that for my.
No, I don't like the meow.
I need another. What is the number here?
288-3131.
There you go.
288 Jamal Lewis. Jamal Lewis.
One of the best that ever played the game, boys.
He played Game Boys?
To jump in if you want here this afternoon. We are just days away from the first annual Fan Run Open at Williams Creek. Somebody had a set of golf clubs out here on the AstroTurf.
It's yours truly.
You getting swings in? On the job now?
I was getting swings in before I came out here.
Went to the range. That's a good teammate.
You better not disappoint us.
Tucker's in here cleaning his clubs in the
young Arnold Palmer. In the towel, just getting ready.
See, if we're playing in a scramble, I'm hoping I can be of more use around the greens while Sam can carry us off the tee. That's good scramble golf.
And who did you say was wanting to pick me up as a player or I could potentially join? We have a couple of guys on the Discord looking for a third. The closer we get to it, the more I actually want to play, even though I suck.
Yes, in the Discord, the name is Peyton.
Huh.
And he has a buddy, and they would like to do it, but teams have to be three or four. So he's maybe we get you guys.
You're
Peyton, if you don't mind an anchor. I'd love to tag along.
Yeah, anchor the team.
Your
That's
athletic
what you meant,
ability
right?
has been, again, brought into question by a friend of ours.
My what?
There were some giggles. Somebody was giggling about the thoughts of you playing golf.
Okay.
They're doubting your abilities.
Barrett, have you been listening to the show for the past month or so? What abilities? I'm terrible. I haven't played in 2 years. I've got a 40-year-old set of golf clubs that are missing most of the key clubs. I actually have a crack in my driver, in the shaft of my driver. It's split open, but I'm too cheap to buy a new one.
The good news is you would not need a driver
this
weekend.
That's true.
You would not need a driver this weekend. What,
yeah, I mean,
par three.
I'm telling you, I'm kind of wanting to play, but
how's the putter? You feel good with the putter?
The putter, yeah. I mean, well, like anybody can, I can fake that.
Just I'll go last. A good read. Yeah,
I'm not gonna top the putt. I'm not gonna shank a putt. I'll miss a putt, but at least look like I know. So yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to pick up an extra, I would like to play. Just don't be expecting anything. You know, any kind of help. I'm good for one shot around, baby. One shot around. Every now and then, you know, I curse a lot. I might throw a club here or there. I make excuses. But one shot around. I'll get up there and just flush one.
You
and
could
be, like,
be clutch on the greens and really help your team out.
Yeah.
Nice couple of lag putts. Maybe 8 to 10 footer.
Yeah. I could get it on the dance floor for you. All right, I'm just putting my services out there.
I have
don't everybody fall over each other.
I have informed Peyton that you have offered your services, and we will monitor the Discord.
I will be. I've been requested to follow, like as a feature group. You know how they do for the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wanted me to follow Marcus Young, his round if he's playing.
He's not playing. He's our caddy.
Caddying for the Fan Run team.
Do we really think Marcus is going to get there on time Saturday morning?
No, no, absolutely not.
I heard Jake told him that it was at 8:55 p.m. on Saturday.
He would make that. No, I think – no, Jake set the over-under for when Marcus would arrive at
8:55. What time does it start?
9. We will send people to their prospective holes at 9, so probably get there, you know, before that.
Hey, stay in your lane. I'm the ranger.
They're going to have breakfast, giveaways, door prizes, raffles.
It's going to be some contests closest to the
pin.
Event.
Nice.
Close to the pin in a putting contest.
Putting contest.
Coming up on the top four at four, Tucker has an NBA story that will shock and or amaze you. Do we need to be paying attention to the NBA playing games? I noticed you were watching last night.
Guilty. There wasn't much on. I said, you know what? It's LeBron. It's Zion.
Why don't we
check it out?
You know, you asked before we went on air, maybe we ought to put it to the people, put a poll in the field. Do the listeners want to hear us cover the NBA?
I will say, I tweeted about it a couple times. Not much interaction, so. Like.
Because I kind of feel like we're the sports show for people that don't
really like the NBA.
Don't like
exactly.
The NBA.
I saw some of the plays, that the play where Zion blocked LeBron's shot, mm-hmm. and then got his shot blocked by AD, and then LeBron came back and dunked, and it looked like the crowd was into it. It looked like
that was
exciting,
great crowd, yeah.
Exciting times, exciting stuff. I just don't know if our audience cares. I certainly don't.
Zion had 40 and then hurt his hamstring.
Yeah.
And he's out, I think, for the next game. So.
But it is a big story coming out of the NBA and the sports gambling world today. Tucker will have the latest on that for you when we continue. Plus, we get to your phone calls after the break. More Fan Run Radio coming up.